Well, if you've got a Bible nearby, which I know many of you do because you already had to use your Bibles, you may just want to have two passages to hand. So Galatians chapter 5, we're just going to drop into that for a moment or two. And then our main passage for tonight is going to be 1 Corinthians 13, or the end of chapter 12 into chapter 13. So we're going to continue a new series in the evening on the fruit of the Spirit, or spiritual growth, looking at spiritual growth. And if you didn't catch the intro sermon and reflections on this, then a couple of weeks ago we looked at Galatians chapter 5, 13 to the end of the chapter there together. And I kind of introduced us to this this list called the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control in verses 22 and 23. So this whole series is going to be hung on those two verses. And therefore, we're going to be looking at all these different attributes of the fruit of the Spirit. These all belong to each other. They're not kind of a list that you can pick and choose from. You can't say, well, I'm a joyful person, so, you know, I'm full of the fruit of the Spirit. No. Love, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control is in the bag as well. They're all together. They're all part of one fruit. They're all just description words of what the fruit of the Spirit produces in our lives. And so we're going to start with love, of course. It's the one at the top of the list here. The first adjective of the fruit of the Spirit, if you want, the one that appears in the life of the Christian believer, the attribute of love, or agape, is the Greek word. Some have said, actually, this passage, this verse, should be read like this: but the fruit of the Spirit is love, which is joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. So the rest are kind of a summary of what all love is, which would be quite convenient because I could do the whole lot in one fell swoop. And I think there is some credit to that. I think that's worth considering, because I think all these other things are wrapped up in love itself. They're all part of love. When you receive love, there is joy. When you receive love, there's peace. Love is patient. Love is kind. We'll come to that in a moment or two. Goodness and faithfulness, all wrapped up in love. Gentleness requires love, and self-control certainly does as well. So I can see the argument where these other attributes actually are describing love, the fruit of love, if you want. And I don't mind if you see it that way. It doesn't matter if you see it as the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, and so forth, or the fruit of the Spirit is love, which is joy, peace, patience, and so forth. Whatever which way you want to look at, it doesn't really matter. But there will be some overlap with what I say and what some of the others will say later. But we won't go to the same depth in all these different areas, of course, because we just won't have the time to do that. However, in some ways, I think I may have one of the biggest challenges in kicking us off on the issue of love, because love is so big. And yet, within our language, it's so small. You know, love is such a massive concept, such a huge word, and yet in our society, it's such a small word in some ways. Yeah, we had kebabs yesterday. I love a kebab. Do you love a kebab? I love a kebab just in the same way as I love my wife. It's such a silly word, because, of course, you react immediately by saying, well, how can that be, Joth? Sure, you don't love a kebab as much as... No, of course I don't. Those two words, that same word, but those two phrases mean completely different things. My love of a kebab is completely different, I hope, to my love for Sue. And so we use this word in all kinds of different ways to talk about all kinds of different things. And it means all kinds of different things, which actually makes it quite difficult for us to consider this at the depth and breadth and height that this love is. A guy called Ralph Sockman said this: love is an overworked word for underemployed emotion. I think he has a fair point. This love, and I want to call it agape love, because this love, and we would never get to the depths of this love without going into the Greek understanding. Because the Greeks, of course, they knew that love was vast. And that you couldn't use the same word for all these many different things. So they had all kinds of words, four which were the predominant ones, which they used for love. They had eros love. Eros love is physical love, motivated by pleasure. There are no New Testament references to eros love. Sturgio love is social love, love between people and ruler, motivated normally by authority and position. We love our king. We love our prime minister. We have to love them. That kind of love, motivated by authority and position. No New Testament references to that whatsoever. Philo love is brotherly friendship love. It's a love motivated by affection and fondness of people. 20 New Testament references to philo love. And then you get this Greek word agape love, or agape love as some people pronounce it. 155 New Testament references for this love. However, in the Greek vocabulary of the time, it wasn't a word that was used that much. It wasn't predominant in its use. The other words were much more predominant. Eros, sturgio love, philo love were used much more often. And yet for the New Testament writers, they knew that they had discovered a loving God that was so great, so incredible. What they had to do is they had to take a word that was rarely used to talk about love, and they promoted it to the highest place. Because this agape love is the unconditional love. The love only really, truly seen in Christ himself, who gave himself fully and completely for us. And so Jesus, Peter, Paul, and the early church re-employed this word, this rarely used word, to define or to talk about unique, divine, special love found within the Christian church and the followers of Jesus. So what is this love? Well, of course, we could go on for hours and hours because the scriptures is absolutely full. We could go through 155 references in the New Testament and then go into the Old Testament if you want. No, okay. So we're actually, I'm not going to use a lot of references because there are so many. But what I want to do is I want to cover eight. Oh, excuse me. Eight different things of what this agape love is. And the first is this. Sorry, I didn't put this on the PowerPoint, so you're going to have to put up with my terrible writing. But the first is this. It is supernatural. It is supernatural love. This is not natural felt love that just oozes out of us. It's not that kind of love. It is a divine, spirit-empowered, supernatural love. Divine love, if you want. We know that Scripture, John particularly, this, I'm going to give you a few references, but in 1 John 4, John talks about love. And a couple of times, in 1 John 4, verses 8, he says, "Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." If you want to know what love is, if you want to know what this part of the fruit of the Spirit, or what the fruit of the Spirit is, if it's love, then you can only see it if you look at God. God is love. He goes on later in verse 16, "And so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them." It's quite, I mean, it's a lovely verse, isn't it? It's a smashing verse. We love that verse. It gets quoted often, particularly if Toby's preaching. He'll quote that verse often. But we've got to stop and think about it. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. I.e., you can only know this love if you're in God. So what that means, is it not, that this is divine? This is supernatural. This is not human love. You will never, ever manage to manufacture up this love within yourself. Only God can give you this love. It's also a charismatic gift. Ooh. Now, I did tell you a couple of weeks ago that we'll do the gifts after we've done the fruit of the Spirit. After we've done this spiritual growth, we'll look at spiritual gifts. But actually, when we go to 1 Corinthians, which we're going to go to in a minute or two, what we discover there, in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul talks about all or many of the spiritual grace gifts. The charismatic gifts, the exciting gifts, the speaking in tongues. I've got some of them written down here, I'm sure. Yeah, apostleship, prophecy, teaching, miracles, healing, administration, speaking in tongues, all these amazing gifts that God, His Spirit, pours out into our lives as Christians. And then he says, in the context of all that, he says, but now I'm going to encourage you to eagerly desire the greater gifts. And the next thing he talks about is love. Agape love, the most excellent way, as he calls it, in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 31. So you can see that this is part of his progression. All these spiritual gifts that are poured out by the Spirit, and in a minute we'll get to the point where actually all of them are nothing without love. Alongside those comes this other spiritual, essential, vital gift given by the Spirit of God, which is love. True love that only comes from God. So first, it's supernatural. Secondly, it's essential. Essential. So we haven't had a reading yet, so we'll stop now and have our reading from 1 Corinthians 13. So if you've got a Bible there in front of you, let me read this to you. So I'm going to go from verse 31 in chapter 12. So Paul writes, "But eagerly desire the greater gifts, and now I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong and a clanging cymbal. If I have a gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give up all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames and have not love, I gain nothing." Let me stop there. We'll come back to some of those other verses in a moment or two. So what he says at the beginning of here, very straightforward, very simple, that actually this most excellent way is the most essential way. Without this love, everything else that we are as Christians is worthless. If you speak in tongues but have not love, you're a clanging cymbal. Anyone sound like a clanging cymbal? It's probably how my singing sounds. But if you have not love, you know, you can sing in the most beautiful tongue and speak and pray over people, but if you're not filled with the love of God Himself, seen in Christ, you're a clanging cymbal. If you prophesy with great wisdom, don't so many of us want to be full of great words of understanding and knowledge and wisdom, and you speak it and people think, wow, but if you have no love, Paul says, it's just worthless. If you have faith that can move mountains, wow, wouldn't you be impressed by that? But have not love. Pointless. Worthless. Even, he says, even if you surrender your body. And I think he says these things because what he's saying to us, it is possible to speak in tongues, to prophesy, to have faith and surrender your body, even surrender your body to the flames, and not have love. That's why he's saying this. There is the potential of doing this. And he says, if you give up your body, if you're martyred for your faith, but you do not have this love, this agape love within your life, then you throw your life away. And he says that love is absolutely, absolutely, completely essential in our lives. I mean, the message couldn't be clearer, could it? And yet, it is really tough. It is not easy to love in the way that Paul is talking about. And sometimes we as Christians, in all the things that we do, okay, I haven't seen many of you moving mountains recently, but worked so hard, the big welcome. Music groups turn up early and sing. Prayer team, meets to pray and to pray with people each Sunday, whatever it is your act of service might be to God, we might do those things, but yet, unless love is right at the center of our motivation, driving us through these things, all that we offer is nothing, says Paul. So this love is absolutely essential. I sometimes wonder what church would be like if, as pastors of this church, we took people to a side when they weren't loving each other. I mean, we don't often talk about discipline in church, and I don't think we would get away with it much nowadays, because you're all so free individual beings, you know, you don't... The respect for the corporate is culturally not there anymore. But in times gone, actually, you know, Charles Wesley times, you know, he would take his close disciples to task if they didn't love each other, because it's so crucial. Are those moments when you're angry at people, are those moments when you're doing things, but actually it's rage, then love, stop and remember this verse. That you can give whatever you want to Jesus, but unless love reigns in your heart and lives, it is worthless. It is worthless. It's absolutely essential. Number three is it is self-giving. Can you see this? I think just about. Yeah? You might not see number four when I get to the bottom, but. Let's just go back to 1 Corinthians 13, and much of what I'm going to say now will hang on these next few verses. So verse 4, you know this well. If you've ever been to a wedding recently, or a few, you'd have heard these words read. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they'll be stilled. Where there's knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. But now these three remain. Faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. So keep your eyes fixed on verses 4 through to verse 7 there for the next few points at least, or most of the next few points. As we think about what Paul says here. So within these, the first thing he says, and it's difficult to categorize these, but the first thing he says is that love is self-giving. It gives of self. There is a great depth and height and breadth to these verses that are just, I reckon these are probably, these verses from 4 to verse 7 are probably, or just going into verse 8, are probably the most read verses in Scripture. It may be second to John 3 verse 16, but maybe actually beats those. Even those, particularly those who aren't Christians, if you said, do you know a bit of the Bible? They may even quote this. And within it, Paul encourages his reader to actually truly engage with what love truly is. And the problem with this passage is that we could actually take a whole series of going through this as well. And that's the danger of tonight, of course, just checking the time. So we could, you know, go to incredible depths of what Paul is saying. But let me try to take you deep enough, but also broad enough to kind of appreciate what is being said here. And the first thing he says is, look, this love is self-giving, seen particularly in two areas, patience and kindness. I'm not going to take a lot of time here because obviously you're going to come back to patience and kindness as part of the fruit of the Spirit, but patience and kindness. My dictionary says this about patience. It relates to the forbearance of people. You know, I don't know. Are you a patient person? We're not people that like to wait. I mean, actually, I think patience is one of these areas that for us, culturally, we're becoming worse and worse at. We don't like to wait for anything. You know, I don't like to wait for anything. If I'm traveling in the car, if it's a red light, I'm like, oh, it's a red light. Come on, green. Have you caught yourself praying for green lights? Am I the only one who prays? No, you know, I'm not the only one. You pray for green lights. What's all that about? God's saying, I'm going to put some red lights in the way so you just slow down and actually give me some time. I think this is an area that we're going to struggle with, and whoever's preaching on this one will I think it'd be worth listening to. My dictionary says the quality of being patient is the bearing of provocation, annoyance, misfortune or pain without compliant, loss of temper, irritation or the like. I mean, are you able to deal with some of these things? You know, when people provoke you, when people annoy you, when there's misfortune in your life, when there's pain, do you find yourself patiently forbearing those issues, or do you find yourself groaning and moaning and grumbling about that person or this situation or that circumstance? I mean, I'm the latter. Find it so natural. I mean, remember the sinful nature against the spiritual nature. The sinful nature is so easy, isn't it? So easy to fall onto the sinful nature of things and be kind of not a patient person, but a moaner, a groaner, a grumbler of people. Being impatient. And actually, patience is self-giving. It's giving of self. It's going to say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm just giving of myself. Kindness. It's very close to patient. You can't be kind unless you're patient with a person. When you meet a difficult person, which, you know, from time to time, you do, don't you? If you're going to be kind to that person, you have to be patient. You're all looking at each other. He's a difficult person, isn't he? But you have to be patient with that person to be kind to that person. And it's in the giving of yourself to that person that kindness can only flow into that person's life. And the minute that person thinks you're fed up with them or bored with them or wanting to get away, no longer does love flow into that person's life. So Paul says, look, love has got to be self-giving. Self-giving. Love has to be selfless. You say, surely that's the same thing. Not quite, but almost, yes. Selfless. Love has to be selfless. He goes on. He says, look, actually, what he does is he describes the symptoms of people who are self-centered. So love does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking. Are they not the symptoms of self-centered people? Self-centered people are envious people. Self-centered people are boastful people. You know, they just want to talk about themselves all the time. Self-centered people are people full of pride. Look at me. Look how great I've done. Self-centered people are rude. Self-centered people are attention-seeking people. You ever attention-seeking? We do it more than we realise, don't we? Sometimes every little opportunity, if I could get a little moment of the spotlight on me. And Paul says this divine love, this supernatural love, this love that flows from God isn't self-seeking. This agape love gets rid of all those things. The person who loves is not envious of someone else, the way they look, the gifts that they have, the materials they possess. Not envious. The agape love that Paul is talking about here is not boastful. It's not about saying in every moment I can kind of boost myself. Actually, the Greek here is a puffing up. You know those, is it a puff fish that blows itself up? That's the kind of picture that comes to mind whenever I see it. You know, it kind of puffs itself up to make itself look bigger than it actually is. And you know what happens when you blow up balloons and then you let them go? They go with a squeak and there's a bit of a laugh, isn't it? And that's what, sorry. And that's what puffed up people are like. You know, they puff themselves up so they make themselves look bigger than they actually are. And this kind of love is actually, that isn't in us. It will not puff up self. It will give of self. It will release of self. It will actually allow self to fade into the background so that others might actually step forward and be recognized and seen. But these are hard things. These are not easy things. That's why it's supernatural. You know, we would never do it unless the Spirit of God is at work in our lives. You see why this is so crucial to spiritual growth. If we want to grow in the Lord, you will never do it on your own. You'll never do it in your own strength. You only do it on your knees before God, saying, God, I can't be such a person. And he says, I know, but I can do it through you as I fill you with my Spirit. And the supernatural work of God begins to take place in your life. Here's another one. Love is, let me show I don't miss one out. Love is forgiving. Well, of course we're all forgiving, aren't we? We all forgive each other. It's easy, isn't it? What does Paul says here? He says, it is not easily angered and it keeps no record of wrongs. You know, people that aren't forgiving are easily angered. People who find forgiveness difficult become angry very quickly. If you're an angry person, if you find anger is something that you're struggling with, ask yourself, when was the last time I actually forgave someone for something in my life or something they did to me? And I bet you that you'll find it hard to remember. And I would say to you, if you want to deal with anger, start forgiving people. Start going to people and saying, you know, I forgive you for that. And I'm sorry that I've held that against you for such a long period of time. And what you find is the anger just begins to melt away as love enters people's lives. I love this bit where it says, he keeps no record of wrongs. That's forgiveness, isn't it? True forgiveness is the element of forgetting of what people have done for us. And have you ever been in that position? You know, I certainly have. When, you know, a argument begins. And you begin to do this thing in your head, don't you? They said this back in 1985. And then they did that in 1976. And I remember the time when that happened back in 1945, or whenever it may have been, and you kind of almost, the past kind of flows up, and we're now in 2016, and all the past, all this history of wrongs go on, because there has actually been no forgiveness that has taken place. It is incredibly difficult to forgive, to the point that God forgives where he forgets. Is it not? And we're talking about complete forgiveness, where God forgives us and forgets. I mean, we actually remember all our own sin, and we keep going back to God saying, you know, I'm a sinner, God. And God is going, I don't know about anything of that. Because he has actually truly forgotten. It's been buried in the deepest sea. And he says to us, this love that I want you to have, I want you to be the same. Someone said to someone, do you remember when so-and-so did that to you? And she said, no, I don't remember. She said, don't you remember? She said, no, I remember the day I chose to forget, though. Like that. I remember the day I chose to forget, i.e. I'm not going back there. I refuse to go back there. I refuse to keep a list in the drawer, to draw it out and when it's convenient and say, you did all these things. Forgiveness is about saying, whatever goes wrong today, we forgive today. And as we enter into tomorrow, it's a new day for each and every one of us. So that the relationship of love between us can be strong and complete. Love is honest. I need to crack through these. Paul says, love is honest. Love does not dance with wickedness or deceit, but instead rejoices. What does Paul say? Rejoices with the truth. Rejoices with the truth. Do you rejoice with the truth? When someone tells you the truth, I think many of you know that there's three people in this congregation that I sit and reflect with. And I say to them, I give them complete permission to say anything to me that they think I need to know as the minister of this church. So I say, how's it going? How's the preaching going? How's the leadership going? Pastorally, and how am I relating to people? All those kind of things. And I say, you've got to tell me the truth. you've got to tell me the truth. And one of these people said to me, do you ask the ministry team what they think of you? Oh, wouldn't ask them what they think of me. So I said, no, well, we kind of have occasionally conversations about me. And he said, well, no, do you give them permission to talk into your life? And I said, well, I suppose I've never given them that permission. So I've started to do that with the ministry team, to actually say to them, I want you to, you know, they come and meet with me and I tell them how they're doing and how they could do better. And I want them to tell me how I'm doing and how I could do better. So Toby and I had this conversation in the car, didn't we, Toby? And I love Toby, but he started telling me stuff that I didn't want him to tell me. You know, I was sitting there thinking, no, Toby, you don't understand. I'm giving you permission to do this so you can say, no, Joth, there's nothing. Nothing whatsoever that I need to tell you. Do you know truth? You know, and he told me this stuff, and I thought, yeah, thanks, Toby. Thanks for that. Really bless you. I did not rejoice in the car as I dropped him off and drove away. But I was so grateful he said it to me. Love rejoices in the truth. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? But when you actually apply it, it's incredibly difficult to do that. I wrote this, it's not a poet, well, it's a prose, I guess, poem, whatever you want to call it. It's called Where There Is Truth. Where there is dishonesty, there will be suspicion. Where there is suspicion, there will be uncertainty. Where there is uncertainty, there will be misunderstanding. Where there is misunderstanding, there will be fear. Where there is fear, there will be pain. But where there is truth, there will be trust. And where there is trust, there will be safety. And where there is safety, there will be freedom. And where there is freedom, there will be joy. And where there is joy, there will be love. Honesty. Love, number 7, says Paul, is constant. Constant. Do you know, right at the end of this bit in verse 7, it says, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Do you hear the emphasis on always? Always. This love always, always, always keeps going. Have you ever said, I've run out of patience? I have. Have you ever said, right, things are going to have to change? Have you ever said, it's about time I start thinking about myself for a change? I'm fed up of looking after you lot. Have you ever said that either out loud or the guys at the back are nodding away? Too right, have I? Thanks for your honesty. That's great. Of course we have. We've all said things like that, haven't we? And we got to a point where we thought, do you know what? My love has run out. I have no more love for you. I am fed up. I'm tired of giving and giving and giving. And it's about time I timed out and had a bit of me time. And I remember someone saying, I'm having me time at the moment. I said, what's me time? I've never heard of this me time. But actually, we all feel that sometimes. It's all good. I need some of me to fill me up. And I'm fed up with giving to people. Well, let me tell you, agape is not that. Agape love is actually a love that keeps going. It is constant. It is always. It's always love. Always. That's the Jesus love, isn't it? Who faced the cross and did not move from the left or the right until he had completed what his Father wanted him to do. It's always love. Always love. Always available. Always prepared to give. Let me tell you, none of you can do this. Have I said that already? But none of us can do this. It's impossible. You know, if you went away and said, do you know what? I'm going to be an agape loving person after this sermon. You will fall flat on your face before you get to 12 o'clock tomorrow. You will. You won't be able to do it. There is not the strength or the energy within you. The only person that can do it is the Spirit of God in you. That can turn you into an always loving person. Who will never stop giving up. Who will keep going constantly, time and time and time again. And such a love that flows from the Spirit of God never fails, says Paul. We had a marriage prep with Declan and Lauren this week, last week, Thursday. And Lauren very rightly pointed out that this passage, in some ways, the way it's written in scriptures, is a little bit unhelpful. And we decided, didn't we, between us, you and me, Lauren, that we decided that love never fails should be a paragraph on its own. So just imagine now that the writing here kind of ends here where Paul says, it always perseveres. Then he goes to a new paragraph. It says, love never fails. Return. New paragraph. Because that love never fails needs to just sit there. And actually, the slower you read it, the better. Love never fails. This kind of love, this love that's supernatural, that only comes from God, this love that's essential in our life, this love that gives of self, that this love that steps back and allows others to step forward, this love that will always forgive, refuse to hold on to things, this love that is honest and true, this love that is constant, this love never fails. It always wins. It always breaks through. It always succeeds. It always overcomes. Whatever the person is facing, it overcomes those things. Whatever can't be resolved, this kind of love will resolve it. It will solve it. This love defeats suffering. This love defeats pain. This love even breaks through death and lives for eternity, because this love is Jesus's love. It's because of him. In fact, actually, Steve, I was going to say to you, and I forgot to. Are you up there, Steve? Oh, yeah, there you are. Could you just put that image of the cross back on the screens that we had when we were singing, He Endured My Pain, I think. Don't know if that's possible. But when I was looking at that image earlier, I thought in my head, I was going to say to Steve at the beginning, just leave that image up there. And if I'd have got more prepared, I would have done that and had this. No, not that one. We know where we had to find it. Now, you had a lovely image with just the cross. That's it. Yeah, take the words away. Can you do that? Yeah. Give him a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Just to have that cross there, because actually that's what this love's all about. And as we approach Easter, it seems so appropriate that we kind of focus on the fruit of the Spirit that is love, because Christ is this complete and pure example of all that we're speaking about. Because this love didn't fail. This love won through to the end. And as we give our lives into his love and allow his Spirit to work in our lives, may we become such people, more and more and more. That he may change us from glory into glory, from love into greater love, into purer love. As gold is purified, may he do that work in our lives. We're not going to jump overnight into the purest of lovely people. That he might change us gradually from one level of glory of love to a new level of glory of love to another level of glory of love. Gradually making us more and more like Jesus. So the world might know that he loved them. Let's just bow our heads for a moment. Let me just give you a moment just to be still. Let's just invite the Spirit of God. Lord, Spirit of God, minister into our hearts and lives. If there's anyone here who's carrying pain, Lord, come and minister to them. May your love fill their lives. And for all of us here, Lord, who want to grow in you, come and minister to us. Come and reveal to us the areas of our lives that we need to just give over to you. Lord, we won't do it in our own strength. We humbly bow before you and say, come, strip away the parts of our lives that need to be taken back now, that only you can do. And may your Spirit flow into us and pour out your precious love into our lives. love divine. All love excelling, joy of heaven to earth come down. Fix in us thy humble dwelling, all thy faithful mercies crown. Jesus, thou art all compassion, pure, unbounded love thou art. Visit us with thy salvation, enter every trembling heart. Finish then thy new creation, pure and spotless let us be. Let us see thy great salvation perfectly restored in thee. Change from glory into glory, till in heaven we take our place, till we cast our crowns before thee, lost in wonder, love and praise. Let me invite the band and the singers to join us again, and we're going to sing that great hymn of Charles Wesley,